We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Coachable family? Welcome to the Coachable podcast. I'm your host, Tori Gordon, and today is a very exciting day. We are in the studio with the one and only Mama Gina, and
Mama Gina's in the
Mama
house.
Mama Gina is in the
Mama
house.
Mama Gina's in the house. You can all calm down.
This is a woman who deserves all the applause, the red carpet rolled out for her, which we did not have today, but should have, because she is truly revolutionizing the world with empowering women to take their pussy back, take their power back, and really embody what it truly means to be in the flow of the divine feminine and the healing that that brings to the planet. And she is an author, she is a speaker, she's a media personality. She is the author of the best-selling book, Pussy, A Reclamation, that I had the honor of reading several years back.
Oh, is that how I got here? Because you read Pussy
I read Pussy at the beginning of my awakening journey.
Oh, this is, I'm going to want to hear every detail.
And since then, it was crazy. I read the book, put it down, and then only in the last year has your name has resurfaced. And I'm like, oh, this is the woman. This is the woman that set the tone for what's possible for me as a woman and helped me to understand the levels in which I had not yet unlocked within my own body and within my own soul and started to access that. And so this woman, you, Mama Gina, are a reference point.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. So quick and dirty, just especially for the listeners, right? What was the Tori before and the Tori after?
Tori before was good girl. The good girl, a religious good girl that was afraid to do anything wrong. Afraid to bring attention to herself, afraid, like a shell of a woman that was putting on a mask and a facade because she was afraid of the shame and the attention and of being wrong.
So well said. I think so many women feel exactly that way, because when you take a woman's access to her body, her feminine, her erotic aliveness away from her, shame moves into the station and permeates everything. So let's say the before Pussy Tori would not be sitting in this seat with me creating ripples in the world in the way you're creating ripples in the world.
So she was hiding. She was fully hiding, and that's what shame does, right? Shame wants to go live in the darkness and hide and keep things secret and not talk about them. And so my relationship to my own body and my pleasure, which is what you are so so divinely gifted at helping women access, was so shut down. And through reading your book, there was also a lot of grief that came through.
Oh yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
And by the way, if anybody listening to this podcast, it feels like you are flooded with shame that you cannot overcome, you can overcome. And this is going to be the beginning of the opening of that portal. And with this sisterhood and yours, you're going to find next steps and next steps and next step, because no woman should spend her life locked and blocked behind shame. Mm-hmm. That is something that we can release from. And here you are, example.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels so good. And that the grief that I had in reading your book was the grief for the part of me that didn't know it was safe or I had permission.
Right.
To be more, to be all that I am, to own all of that it was okay. It was okay to desire. It was okay to feel good in my body. It was okay to prioritize my pleasure. So I want to sort of start with you
Let's start there.
Around our desires, especially as women, you know, our education around sex, our education around pleasure is minimal and terrible. And so depending on where for me, I grew up in the Bible Belt.
Okay.
I grew up in my family wasn't very religious, but I found community in the church. That was my first place to find.
Remarkable and brilliant choice.
Yeah.
And it came with a price.
It did.
But it was worth it at the time because you got community.
And I didn't know what I was giving up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At the time. I didn't know what I was sacrificing. Yeah. And
what I was being. And no woman does, because it's not just the Bible Belt. Every belt is some kind of belt. It's some kind of like chokehold on the feminine, because we live in a world, I'm going to call it a patriarchal world culture, a world that prioritizes the values of men, you know, going out, achieving, accomplishing, showing up, working hard, and not only deprioritizes the feminine, but ignores the feminine, puts down the feminine, disapproves of the feminine. There's really no woman alive that hasn't experienced some kind of consequence of living in a culture in where she's either experienced a verbal or abuse, physical abuse, being ignored, being overlooked, making 70 cents on the dollar that a man is making in the same spot. There's a lot of almost invisible prejudices that women shrink to accommodate living inside of a culture that doesn't even, I was listening, there's a little clip floating around right now of Meryl Streep saying, she says, you know, women have learned to speak man, but men don't speak woman. And then immediately one of the guys on the panel with her said, what Meryl's trying to say here, you know, and it was just
Let me mansplain you what she's trying to say.
Which is so perfect, because it's those kinds of things that those invisible chokeholds are very disempowering, because, you know, how this let me just ask you and think about this if you're listening to this. When you were growing up, when you were a little girl, what did your parts get called?
We rarely talked about that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yes, as because I had a sister. I had no brothers, but like your hoo-ha or something.
Okay, you had a hoo-ha. Great, and I will ask this question, you know, to any room that I'm teaching to, whether it's 1,000 women or 100 women. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, what did you get called? Now, and then, and I get a variety of answers. I get like hoo-ha, coochie, pee-pee hole, front bottom, purse, knish.
Really?
Kitty. Huge, massive names. And half of the women, they'll say nothing.
Yes.
There was no word.
There was no word. It sort of was blank.
It was blank. And then I'll have like the daughters of gynecologists that'll be like, well, we called it a vagina. And then I'll be like, but it's not a vagina. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's how strange it is, because if I ask a room full of men, you know, 100 men, 1,000 men, I'll be like, what did your parts get called? And they'll be like, penis.
Yep.
What's your problem, mama? You know, and so it's just so different. And why is that even significant or important? Well, you know, picture like you're a little girl and I'm a little girl and we're in kindergarten and we were riding the seesaw and we both bumped ourselves and, you know, because we went crashing to the ground and we had like, and you'd run to the teacher and you'd say, my hoo-ha hurts. And I'd run to the teacher and say, my knish or my kitty hurts. And the teacher would be like, what do we even do with that? Where is that?
Yeah.
Do you even, what are those things? Like, what are you talking about? You know? So it's like we have separation amongst women. We don't even have a language for that, which is essentially feminine, like the heart and beating core of our unique feminine identity. And there is no word. Mm-mm. And it, Jesus said in the beginning, there was the word. Mm-hmm. There, you know, how would we describe the internet?
Yeah.
If we didn't have the word internet, you'd be like,
yeah,
there's like invisible, like
right
waves. And I don't know, like really what it is, but like it makes my phone work.
Right.
And I can get email, you know. So it's like language is super, super important. Central. And so because we don't have that commonality amongst women, we don't even have the word. Mm-hmm. Immediately, a little girl thinks, oh, wow, something's wrong with me because we can't even say the name.
It's unspeakable.
It's unspeakable. And so immediately she starts to feel not just shame about her, I taught my daughter that the word is vulva, mm-hmm. because it's the exterior genitalia. And the vagina you can't see except a gynecologist with a speculum, sure. We'll see. So, but when she doesn't even have the word, she feels so much shame, like something must be wrong with her, something must be wrong with me. And then that shame starts to permeate, and it goes not just to her vulva, but she starts thinking that her body is wrong because it's not conforming to the masculine value that's honored and celebrated, or her thoughts are wrong, or the way she experiences her emotions are wrong. Like that wrong, that body hatred, that self-hatred, that self-doubt, that self-deprecation, it starts to spread everywhere because she doesn't even have a word to describe that which is most essentially feminine and sacred about herself. So it's not just a Bible Belt problem. It's an every belt problem. And it's something that because it's so invisible, we don't even know that we've had this power removed by the exterior patriarchal culture. And by the way, when I say patriarchy, I am not talking about men. Mm-hmm. I love men. Men are amazing. And men actually suffer from this culture, the patriarchal world culture, just as much as we do, if not more, in very different ways.
Yeah.
So it's like every mama has an opportunity through her own connection to her own body and her own recognition, like, oh, wow, like I can connect to my vulva. Or in my case, I like to call it a pussy because it's so sassy and kind of nasty. Mm-hmm. And it makes women laugh when you say pussy. That's the whole point.
That was the word that was the unspeakable word.
That's the unspeakable word.
That your book helped me, which is why it's called a reclamation, because it was like, no, I want to take this back.
Yes.
And make it mean what it essentially means. Yeah. Instead of using it as a degrading or whatever word.
Yes.
No, this is a powerful word that I get to own and make my own. And I get to set the standard for how that is used.
Exactly.
But what you're saying is so important and foundational, because it is what you just said, the fact that we don't even have terminology and language for this stuff, and the fact that I couldn't even speak openly about it with my mother or my sister or my the closest women to me who should be educating me about these things. It was like, so where do we go to learn about it? And this is the foundation for our identity.
Yeah. Exactly.
Our identity gets built upon this not knowing who we are.
Exactly. Okay. And it's even more crazy than that, because like, let's say if we don't own our power, we don't even know we have power, right? You know, for example, like let's say we're one back in the schoolyard, you know, and we're, you know, you and I are playing, and we have this little friend, and his name is Biff. Mm-hmm. And we're like playing the score, and he has a penis, and we have nothing, or, you know, a little hoochie or whatever you have. We don't think anything's wrong, right? But then, as we get to be, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, 12, maybe 13, our bodies are starting to change. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we look at Biff and we're like, oh, he's so handsome. Mm-hmm. He's so hot. Oh, wow. And maybe even Biff, maybe he flirts with us or he gives us a little kiss and we feel all tingly inside, mm-hmm. and we don't know why. And then suddenly, instead of knowing, oh, that is my power, my erotic aliveness is awakening inside of me. How splendid and spectacular that this experience of myself as a little young tween or teen, I am getting this flood of sensation. Wow. We don't think that at all. Right. We think, oh, Biff, oh, he makes me feel this way. Mm. I need him. I need to chase after him because it's only in his presence that I get to feel this alive. And then we become like chasing power instead of owning power, because we're always thinking something outside of ourselves.
It's externalized.
Is going to give us that sense of ourselves. Mm. And it doesn't even have to be a cute boy or girl, depending on your sensual or sexual orientation or openness. Mm-hmm. It might be like you think you have to get into Harvard or your life is meaningless, or you have to get married and have a baby and your life is meaningless. Like, it is a sense that you are not enough and there's something outside of yourself that will complete you. And oh my Jesus, Mary, Joseph, Yahweh, Buddha, all the people out there, like, that is a big problem. Because then you have a bunch of women who are chasing all of that radiance that truly lives within. Mm-hmm. And she will never find if she's running after it somehow.
Okay.
Ugh, so it good. Makes me need to lie
it's
down.
So
I need to rest.
Good. It's so essential. I need you to tell. I've heard you tell this story, and it brought me to tears when I heard you talk about the goddess.
Oh,
and how you found the goddess.
Oh, boy.
And not your path. From going to searching out there, where is she? How do I find her? How do I connect with her?
Yeah.
That eroticism, that aliveness, the creator of all that is. Mm-hmm. How did you, where did you discover
her? Okay, so I'm going to tell you a wacky story, but, you know, there's a lot of wacky stories. So I grew up with in a family that had abuse patternings. Mm-hmm. So I had that experience of abuse from a little girl. But, you know, you don't think anything. It's like home. You know, it's fine. Yeah. I'm sure the kind of abuse that I had was nothing compared to the kinds of abuse patternings that exist in so many cultures and so many corners of this world and earth that are so much more devastating than what was happening in my family. But nevertheless, it had a consequence inside of me. And so I somewhere around the age of 4, 5, or 6, I just remember thinking, like, I'm not looking forward to the day anymore. Like, I'm just feeling like, and I thought, like, how could that be? I'm a child. Like, I'm supposed to be enthusiastic. And then
you had that awareness.
Which is weird. I remember because I was ridiculously enthusiastic. I was like one of those children that, you know, like, my mother would teach me, just go outside and jump rope until I wake up. Mm. You know, I was probably running around the house saying, where's everybody?
Yeah.
You know, yep. The day has begun. And people wanted to sleep. So around that time, I had this experience of the goddess coming to me, which and she would sit like on my pillow, and I couldn't really see her, but I could feel this sort of presence of this beauty and radiance, and it would make me feel like all kinds of like delicious and liquidy and yummy inside. And so I'd want to see her, and I'd turn, but when I went direct, she would vanish and vaporize. And she never said anything, she was just there. And
it was so, just like a sense, this you could sense. Feel this sense of something that's
and
like calling.
Yes, it would, and so I came up with this scheme, which was like, okay. Maybe in addition to there being a god, there's also a goddess. And maybe she's like with the Catholics, because my friend Susan Murphy was Catholic. And so I made Susan take me to church, because I thought if they have Christmas and like Christmas fairies and Christmas decorations, there's got to be like goddesses going on in the Catholics. Yeah. So they took me to church, but there was like nothing. So then I thought, well, I'll keep, it was very, you know, as you know, churches, it was not the goddess. Okay, so I went to other, Baha'i shrine, Buddhist shrine. Like, I just went to all the different temples that I could get people to take me to as a kid, looking for the goddess, but I never, as you can imagine, found her. Mm-hmm. And somewhere, I went to college, got out of college. I wanted to be an actor, so I moved to New York City. But somehow all of the congestion of my life, like I was so filled with shame and I had so little confidence that I couldn't even bring myself after a certain point to even audition because I knew I didn't know who I was as a woman and I didn't know where my aliveness was and I had no sense of my own value or importance and I just was depressed and disenfranchised and, you know, suicidal ideations and I was fucking lost. Mm-hmm. Okay, so somewhere along the line, someone invited me to take a acting class and I went to the class and the teacher of the class said, you're a good actress, but you have no sensuality. Mm. You're like just, you know, wooden vanilla, you know, probably like you after you mm-hmm. got out of all, yes. you know, you pre-pussy. So I was like, oh shit, I need to work that out. So I'll take a class in it. And I took a class from a place called Moore University. It was called Basic Sensuality. And at one point in the class, they had you do an exercise where you were to pretend as if the most important person was coming to visit you. Mm-hmm. But the secret was it was you. And so you set up your apartment or your room with candles and flowers and chocolates and taking a bath and like treating yourself. Mm-hmm. And this was such a shock to me because I came from, you know, my mother's a Jewish mother and passed that legacy on to me. And I knew that my purpose was to take care of my family, take care of my parents, take care of my boss, take care of everyone else. But I never learned anything about taking care of myself right. or addressing my own pleasure. I was just like a vehicle for service. And so I'd never done anything like addressing my pleasure. Mm. And I noticed as I set up for this experience, lit the candles, put on music, time and space changed. And I wasn't rushing. I was like, whoa, there was so much pleasure everywhere. The music, the taste of the bubbly water with a squeeze of lemon. It was just, I was like, wow. And then I looked in the mirror because part of the exercise was to view yourself in the mirror. So I've got the candles, I've got the music, I've got these little beautiful taste sensations. I've just come from the bath. I look at myself in the mirror for literally maybe the first time without looking for my pimples or my problems. I looked in the mirror and I saw the goddess looking back at me. And I was like, that's where she's been hiding. She's been hiding inside of every single woman, and we do not know. And the woman's access to her divinity is not working hard, taking care of others, manning up. It's paying attention to your own pleasure, to your own joy above all other values. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, shit. I gotta tell every woman.
Yeah, I found her.
I gotta tell, there's the goddess.
Yeah.
She's here and she's in every woman. And women don't know that. And I feel like the world would change if women knew they were divine. So from there, my life took a completely different turn. Mm. So I wanna say just like, really just like as an aside, anybody who's listening to this podcast and you feel like you've got a dream inside you, that is, you have a calling, you have something that is new, uniquely yours to bring to the world like you have found and are finding more and more every day, follow it. There is nothing more important than paying attention to your desires because the world requires our desires to evolve. And it's time for women to stop keeping a lid on their longings, even when they're crazy out there, like me deciding to awaken the goddess inside of every woman, you know, a girl in a dream. It's possible. Yeah. A shy, tortured girl with a dream, the best. You know, I think being tortured is helpful.
Oh, the beauty and the like the... when I hear you tell that story, I'm like, holy shit. And I love holy shit because I'm like, there is holy in some shit.
Yeah, that is for sure. I think that's where the holy lives.
In the shit.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's like, and so this is the, like, that moment of reverence where you find her and you see her and you're like, oh, she's been this close all along.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've, and now there's this access, like, I can never not know that.
Right.
Once you see her, once that light turns on, you can never unsee it. And
that's,
you know that, like, you can access her whenever you choose. And the vibrancy, even as you were just talking about the simple pleasures of the bubble bath or the sparkling water or this or that, it's like the vibrancy, the color that comes into life.
Right.
And the presence.
Right.
That it, when you drop in, oh, this is what it means to be present.
Yes.
First of
exactly.
All. And how life just starts to morph and transform in front of your eyes, literally. Mm-hmm. And the sensation of everything becomes, you're no longer numb. It, you can feel, you
right.
can sense on so many different levels.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so good. It's so juicy. So here's my, and then you came right back to desire, which is where I wanted to go with this, because, and you said, follow your desires, listen to those longings. So many women, they shut that down and they're like, no, just be grateful for what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Don't ask for more. Mm-hmm. Just be grateful for what you have. That longing that's like, maybe there's something else. Maybe there's that feeling that I want to feel, but I don't know how to access.
Yeah.
And but I'll just take what I'm given. I'll just tolerate what I'm given, right? Instead of listening to your desires. Because for me, I was taught, your heart is deceitful. Don't listen to your heart. Don't listen to your desires. That will lead you astray.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So much of my unlearning is that has been around that actually my desires are the path.
Right.
Like that, I'm supposed to lean into my curiosity. I'm supposed to lean into my questioning. I'm supposed to lean into the thing that I'm like hungry and craving versus deny myself.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's interesting, like women have a lot of problems with desires.
Yeah.
First of all, we don't know what we want.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, like, you go out on a date with some guy, some woman, and they say to you, well, where would you like to go? I don't know. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Like, or what do you want to eat? Oh, I don't know. What do you want to eat? Like, we immediately offload the longing onto someone else.
Having to even sit with.
Yeah.
What do we want?
Because we're ready. We don't know what we want. We haven't done the research on it. And then even once we know what we want, the first and most immediate thing happens is we think, oh God, I can never get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to get it. So why even bother?
I shouldn't ask for it.
Yeah, you know, like, okay, maybe I want to go to that 4-star restaurant, but nobody will want to take me there, you know, because, like, it's too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we shut it down? And then the third difficulty and challenge with desire is that once we actually get something, it's hard to have it, to let it in. You know, we want to just push it away and not really receive it, because women haven't, you know, we don't want to be perceived of as greedy,
full of ourselves,
or well, who am I to have that? You know, we you know, we're taught, you don't want, you know, don't be greedy, don't ask for too much. So it's very challenging to realign a woman to be able to really just sink into the deliciousness of not even, women are so easy and so much fun around pleasure and desire. We don't even need to have the thing. Just like imagining a desire is so incredibly,
the fantasy of it.
It's
yeah,
so
the,
oh it's my like, goodness, like to just have something that you long for. So
I want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor of this week's episode, Camuso Design. Camuso is one of my all-time favorite brands because they are not just a jewelry brand. They are truly my hack for relieving anxiety and stress in my day-to-day life. And I'm about to tell you why. I wear their Shift necklace. It is an absolutely beautiful stainless steel necklace
that is designed in such a way to help you relieve stress and be more calm. And genuinely, that's exactly what it does. I wear this all the time because all I have to do is breathe. I, as you guys know, I'm a breathwork facilitator. I absolutely love the power of breath. And with the Camuso Design Shift Necklace, it is a simple, beautiful reminder that hangs around my neck to remind me to stop, slow down, breathe deeply, and allow my body to do the rest. Because we truly are our own medicine if we allow ourselves to be. So with this necklace, all I have to do is take a deep inhale through my nose and breathe out through this beautifully crafted necklace. I breathe into the necklace itself. And what it does is it naturally elongates my exhale, helping me to downregulate into my parasympathetic nervous system, feel calmer and clearer in just a few seconds. This is the best thing you can do for yourself, is gift yourself the gift of calm with Camuso Design or a friend. I gave these away when I was at Burning Man on the Playa, and every single person that I gifted one to was so grateful and amazed. They have beautiful stains for women, men, and children. So this is one of the absolute like favorite things I have in staples in my closet, but also one of my very favorite wellness secrets that I'm no longer keeping secret. So make sure you guys go over to camusodesign.com/coachable to get 15% off your order today. That is camusodesign.com, KOMUSO design.com/coachable, and receive 15% off your order. Now back to our episode.
I remember the first time I heard someone say, a woman tell me that you deserve what you desire.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, well, that's interesting. I've never heard that before. You know, even though, but it was such a contrast to what I had thought. I was supposed to suppress and deny the things that I wanted. And as a byproduct of that, so I started to open, and your work has helped me with, like, where does one begin with connecting to her sensuality? Where does one begin with reclaiming her pussy? Where does one begin with tapping into the goddess within and the divine feminine? For me, it was just looking at all the ways I denied it in the first place, which was just, here's a compliment and just receive it. Just allow it to sit in. Like, let that sit. Don't be like, oh, well, you look so beautiful. Thanks, but like, no, I'm having a horrible hair day or whatever. Yeah. Just let it land. That was like the beginning.
That's good. That's a really good beginning. Another way you can feed and fuel your desires and feed and fuel your sensuality is with the experience of pleasure. Because whenever you have an experience of pleasure, it turns on all of your neurotransmitters, including beta endorphin, serotonin, prolactin, all the hormones of bonding, the feel good hormones. And when those are kicked on, it ameliorates the cortisol, the stress hormone. So it's pleasure is kind of the fuel of the of desire and the fuel of the erotic. So and if you think about it, each of us as women were designed. We have 8,000 nerve endings dedicated to pleasure. That's the clitoris. And men don't have an organ like that. You know, a guy's cock, while it is a pleasure center for sure, it only has 4,000 nerve endings dedicated to pleasure. Plus, it's a multi-tool. It does a lot of things. It pees, it ejaculates, it's busy. It has places to go pee.
Yeah,
to
our clit just
Our clit, all she does is she just like, oh yeah, I can feel that.
Yeah.
Okay, a little more of that. You know, it doesn't do anything except receive pleasure. And it never atrophies, and it doesn't disease. So it's a remarkable. It's remarkable, but what it means is sort of like how function follows form. Like, we would not want to serve a slice of pizza in this because it's a cup. And you don't, and the same thing with like the feminine body. In order to take advantage of what does that mean, the functionality of 8,000 nerve endings designed for pleasure. What it means is if 8,000 of your thoughts every day are not about your pleasure, you're not living the design of what it means to be a woman. If 8,000 of your decisions, 8,000 of your longings, then you're not living the design. And you want to live the design because actually it's a contribution if you're pleasured, right? If you and I pay attention to our pleasure, if our well is filled, then we have nothing but surplus for our men, our women, our children, our families. But if that well is empty, and you know so many girlfriends.
Dry
as a bone. And when women ignore their pleasure, they start to blame others. They're like, okay, I'm never going to be happy. And it's because of my husband. Mm. He never remembers my birthday. He's going out drinking every night with his friends. He doesn't pay attention to me, even though I'm standing here and saying, look at me, pay attention to me. You know,
if he did, I would run and hide. Like if he gave me his full presence, I wouldn't know what even to do with it.
Yeah. And when she doesn't, exactly. And when she isn't paying attention to her pleasure, she's blaming another person for the fact that she is not fulfilled. And it's not ever going to be possible to fulfill her until she chooses to plug into the gift and the grace and the miracle of being born a woman. You know, she who bleeds but does not die and gives life, like that is fucking sacred. And if she is owning that, if she's saying like, I am the giver of life, whether I push out a baby or not, when I move into a room, just my awareness, my contribution, like what I see is so valuable, so important. And I'm always taking time to make sure that I am filled, because it's only, we're the only ones who could do that. I mean, you can train other people in your life to help you with that. But first you have to know what you want.
Of course. Of course. So for the women that are like, okay, I am that woman who has been disconnected. I've been blaming. I've been dry. I'm shut down.
Yes.
That is I have friends in their 30s, never had an orgasm before, have been with partners for years and years and years. And I like you, I want to empower them to experience all that's available. Where does one begin in learning to pleasure oneself?
One goes to www.mamaginas.com and like clicks on, because I have like little free things for people, like a 5-day pleasure challenge, which is very challenging to take 5 days and do a little bit of pleasure for yourself, or any of my books. Yeah. I've written 4. Pussy, A Reclamation is my most recent. It's a great place to start, because I always like to give exercises in the book. But it could be something simple, like if you're just listening to this podcast, you never open my website or my books, but you just think to yourself, I'm about to get make myself a cup of tea. Which cup would I like? You know, do I want to have my Coachable podcast cup, or do I want to have that old beautiful tea set that my grandma left me with the little gold handles? Or do I want to take myself out to a coffee shop and just take a few minutes to myself right now? Like, which would give me the most pleasure? Even just having the thought about a thing that might be lovely, it creates loveliness.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to do by yourself. You need sisterhood. It really helps, because when you have a community of women that are all stoking the coals of pleasure, it is really helpful. But you can. You really can. You could pick a little flower from your garden and put it on your desk. Simple, but every time you see it, you'll think, I did that for myself. I matter.
Yeah.
And little things like that, they add up.
They do. They do. You were just talking about the importance of having somebody teaching someone else how to pleasure you as well, how to participate in this. I got the pleasure of meeting your partner who is here today. And I know that you recently got re-engaged.
We got re-engaged. Although it feels like we're just engaged, but we got re-engaged.
So I'm curious, what has your relationship journey been like, and how has this work also influenced how you show up in partnership, and what does that look and feel like to you right now, and how does that contrast to maybe your history?
Well, let's see. I would say that Where do you want me to start in? Mm. Like the fact that I'm, you know, kind of how I've used the discipline of pleasure to inform my relationship life overall?
Yes. Or,
okay. I would say that before I met Peter, who I'm so proud of our relationship and so grateful to him, because it's almost like, I'm just so in love with him, and I've never really had this experience before. But let's say on my journey, my tapping into my pleasure was super helpful and super transformative for me, because, for example, I was a single mom raising my daughter, and she was challenging. And so during the years of raising her, I recognized, like, all right, you know, Regina, you have limited time, limited attention. You're not really going to be able to have like a boyfriend with running a company and having a daughter. But, you know, because I was like raising her all by myself.
Sure.
It's full time. And then work was full time. So I was like, but you could create loverships that could support you, that could keep you filled up and tapped into your feminine. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was aware of, let's say, my priorities and my limitations. Mm-hmm. But my attunement to pleasure allowed me to really make decisions that worked for different periods of my life.
Of course.
Then once my daughter went to college, I had a lot more free space. And I was like, okay, now it's my moment. Mm. Now is my moment to like really draw in my beloved and my partner. And that's exactly when I met Peter.
Mm. So I'm curious how your relationship to the divine masculine has, as you've increased your and embodied and lived in your divine feminine, how has that changed or enhanced your relationship to the masculine?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because I think in the beginning, you know, because like many women, and especially because I was running a not just a company, but a global movement, you know, a lot of parts and pieces and doing live events all year round and so forth. So there's a way, even though I was like the pleasure queen or the pussy queen, I was also, I had my big cock strapped on, and I was like organizing events and telling, you know, making staff and having staff and, you know, and using that masculine, because I have a really very well-developed masculine as well as feminine. But I would say during those years, especially the raising Maggie, raising the business years, I was really strapped in with my huge, gigantic, fabulous cock.
Yeah.
And then I found, and so let's say when I was looking for a partner, I kind of had a list. I was like, well, he has to have this much money, and he has to be this, looks like this, and he has to be like a alpha thought leader in the world, so we could be, you know, we could be co-beasts together and enlighten the world. Like, I just had this like list, and which was so not useful. My list was not acknowledging the divinity in a manner even relating to that. It was all about me. What did I in my big fat ego want? But it was like my desire taught me how to break open to loving deeper than I had ever loved before. And I think that's the beauty when a woman is able to surrender her to her desire. It may take her on a circuitous pathway that's not linear.
Right.
But it will always lead her not just to her dreams, but to something far greater than she could have ever imagined. Because I promise you, the women in my legacy, none of those women had that experience of being so deeply held and loved the way Peter holds and loves me. Wow. You know, people in my legacy, the women married for different reasons, for survival or other things. And so I just feel like, wow, I made it through to get to live the life of a woman who is truly loved and cherished. And I did not start out that way.
And that, I think, is just a message in itself to all of the women listening to this show, is that I think we think that that's almost a fairy tale, a fantasy. Right. We don't have enough reference points and examples for that is a real, living, tangible possibility. It exists. It's not just a hope and a dream. Yeah. It is possible for you to find that.
Yeah, and I think that desires, they will break you.
Mm.
And then they will remake you.
Mm.
As long as you stay connected to your pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And as long, because when, you know, let's say even during the year that I was broken up with Peter, is actually 2 total, I always longed for love.
Mm-hmm.
I never stopped longing to be like a woman loved in this body, in this lifetime, even though I'd broken up with him. I fell in love with somebody else. That thing blew up. There was no evidence mm-hmm. that I was going to reconnect with Peter in this particular way, but it was like trusting my desires, trusting my longings, and fueling myself with my own turn on and radiance mm-hmm. and pleasure that allowed the great pussy in the sky or the divine one or the universe to lead me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very different than a hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the feminine journey is willing to be broken and remade over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. In your periods and seasons of longing and singleness, how did you love yourself during that time when you didn't have someone else that was actively also loving you?
Okay, this is a really good question, and it kind of brings me back to something that you said at the very beginning of our conversation, which was, you said as soon as you read Pussy, a Reclamation, it almost brought you to this place of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Inside of yourself,
mm-hmm.
because you were like, whoa, how could I have never known about my own majesty as a yeah. woman? How could I have not known about the importance of pleasure? How could I have been so disenfranchised from myself as a woman? And so let's say for me, one key factor that allowed me to stay connected with that desire was grieving, was, you know, being within my sisterhood, because I think sisterhood is the key. It is the most important thing to have your close girlfriends that they don't baby you mm-hmm. or fix you. They hold space while you grieve, shed, just like in the East Coast where I live, that it's autumn,
mm-hmm.
the leaves are shedding. We don't want to tape the leaves up there right. and say, don't fall leaves now.
Yeah.
It's like,
we witness it.
Women's bodies are cyclical. We ovulate, we menstruate. That's how we hold life. And it's this. So for me and for you, you needed to, and all women, we need to go through that process of shedding, mm-hmm. grieving, allowing ourselves to fall apart, being held and receiving the support of sisterhood and the support of our community so that we can then reconnect with our turn on
yep.
and reconnect with our longing. So I think that giving myself the space to do that, because I wasn't just grieving the disconnect from Peter, but I was grieving, you know, my childhood, the lifetimes of never really receiving that mm-hmm. divine masculine love that I always wished I could have. And, you know, I had to grieve whatever was separating me from embodying that truly.
Yeah.
And then additionally, I did date other people because I thought, you know, this could go, I could reconnect with Peter, but I could also see if there's another opportunity for me out there mm-hmm. that I might be missing, and I would just enjoy meeting and experiencing other men
mm-hmm.
and saying yes to different adventures that opened up for me. So
yeah.
it was like It is a discipline. Pleasure is a discipline. It's a practice. It's very easy to have a miserable life. It's so simple. You just disconnect from your pleasure. You will have a miserable life. And you want to, like when you're in, like when you're feeling like there's some times when you just want to just hide. Mm-hmm. But that discipline, like going to the gym, connecting to your pleasure, self-pleasuring, taking pleasure from your body, from, you know, this gorgeous, beautiful body as a woman, and in whatever way that you can possibly connect to mm-hmm. your pleasure, is every single day fuels a woman's desire and fuels a woman's ruptures.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah. Oh, well, you are also, you know, as you said, you run these massive events. You're the CEO of the School of Womanly Arts. You teach women these practices, the practice and the discipline of connecting with our pleasure and with our divinity and with our creative power.
Yeah.
What do you hope that women take away from this conversation, but also your work and your legacy, and like, what is the, anything like that one message for women out there right now? Like, what do you want to speak into?
I think that if I were to have one message, it would be that women are the greatest untapped natural resource on this planet. Mm-hmm. And the time to tap is now. Women's voices are wanted and needed and required. We see it everywhere in the world where the masculine, the patriarchal voices are valued. There's so much imbalance, so much strife, so much ignoring of the climate and Mother Earth. And I feel that once women are tapped into their joy, their pleasure, their pussies, they will stand powerfully for what they envision, what they see, what they long for, not just now, but for the girls of today, the boys of today, who will be the men and women of tomorrow. You know, as women, we want to stand for this world to be alive and thrive and for each other. And when a woman's voice is unleashed, she sees the way and she wants to take everyone with her.
Oof. Yes, 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 yes. The divine feminine says yes. So
yeah. Yes.
That's so powerful. I hope and trust and know that the women and the men listening to this podcast and to the show today have received what they need, the medicine that they need, the permission slip, which I feel like you just give with your presence, just by being yourself, to women like me and around the world, just saying you deserve what you desire.
Mm-hmm.
You're able and have the goddess within you, like to connect with her anytime you choose, you know, and it's just this big fat permission slip to be and love and accept all that you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think we need women's voices like you ringing and from like the rooftops.
You. Thank you. And like you, you know, because the doorways that you open for women that I will never touch is huge. And what's your vision? What are your desires?
I mean, the premise of this show and my life and my mission in the world is to lead and live a life that feels as good as it looks.
Mm.
I want to be the embodiment and the example for other women of what it looks like to have an internal world that matches her external world.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And the pleasure and the joy that I cultivate and experience within myself
mm-hmm.
will only be reflected in my external world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So gorgeous. The more that I attend to that place as primary versus externally trying to control and shift and change things,
mm-hmm.
They naturally kind of do that on their own. So just keeping that as the foundation in the center and letting my the show or whatever I have in my life just be a representation of what's happening on the inside of me. Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. And so it shall be, or something even better.
Yeah, amen. Aho, I love it. Thank you. Thank you for being all that you are. Thank you for your presence,
for your mentorship,
for your wisdom, for your medicine. Please tell our audience what you're most excited about right now, what you're working on right now, how they can obviously find your books. Mm. We'll put all of this information in the show
notes.
But yeah, please share with people.
The thing I'm most excited about is I've just launched my very first pleasure coaching certification plan.
Wow.
So that amazing. Means I'm going to have the privilege of mentoring a whole new generation, a whole new group of women who have this longing inside of them to be of service, to teach women about their pleasure, to teach women to connect to their erotic aliveness, to use all the tools that I have at the School of Womanly Arts, and to be able to develop their own coaching or facilitating business, or working with therapists or other facilitators who want to just like add a little special sauce to their game. So I'm so excited about that because I love mentoring.
Yeah.
And it's my time of life to do that.
Yes. Okay. So if somebody's interested in that, where do they go? MamaGina.com?
Yeah. MamaGinas.com. www.mamaginas.com.
Yes. Wonderful.
That's where it is.
Okay, you guys, we will put all of that information in the show notes along with Mama Gina's information, how you can connect with her on social media. This has just been a pleasure. It's been an honor. And I hope that you take not just what our words, but you feel our hearts. You feel the presence of what's possible when you connect to your own power. And the beauty, anything that you can see in your mind, you can create it. And you are that powerful portal creator. So allow yourself to sit maybe in reverence today and sit in a stillness or a pleasure practice and envision, what do you want to see created in the world? What more beautiful world would that look like for you? And know that you have the power to create it when you connect and tap into that place of pleasure. So until next week, you guys, go be coachable. Go apply what you know. I love you. We'll see you next week on the Coachable Podcast.
Okay, beautiful.